From the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz, you're listening to Earth First Radio. Stay tuned for No Compromise news, views, poetry, and music.
You're cutting chainsaws, killing the trees. There's something, everything that lives in peace. Our animal friends are on the run. But there's nowhere to go when the job is done. All takes place. We've got to stop this inhuman race. No compromise. No compromise. No compromise. No compromise. No compromise in defense of Mother
And welcome to Earth First Radio. I'm Uncle Dennis, and each week I bring you No Compromise news, views, poetry, and music for activists on the front lines of the environmental movement. In the news, you'll hear about corporations, government agencies, and people who are killing the planet, and about the folks who have detailed information about saving what's left. They all have names, addresses, phone numbers, fax numbers, email, or web addresses, so please get a pencil or a pen and some recycled paper to write down the information. Because this isn't couch potato radio, it's activist radio, and I'm asking you to take down the information and act on it. You really can make a difference by writing letters, sending faxes, and making phone calls when you aren't out in the woods, up in a tripod or a tree sit, or locked down in that dragon at the road blockade. If you do have news, information, comments, or announcements for Earth First Radio, please keep your pencil handy and listen for the contact information in the later part of the show. And we're going to start off with action news. We start off every week with action news. We move to Tucson, Arizona, where more than two dozen Tucson demonstrators are arrested in a telescope protest. Why would you protest a telescope? Well, listen up. Authorities arrested 27 opponents of the Mount Graham Telescope Complex last week after a confrontation inside a laboratory and a clash with officers elsewhere on campus. University of Arizona police who responded to a 911 call found about 35 people wearing masks inside and outside the Stewart Observatory Mirror Lab beneath the university's football stadium. Members of the group said they went to the lab to present a letter of protest to its director concerning the university's telescope development atop Mount Graham, which is 125 miles northeast of Tucson. A number of environmental organizations and members of the San Carlos Apache tribe have challenged the university's three-telescope observatory atop the 10,700-foot mountain for more than a decade. The university is completing construction of the Large Binocular Telescope, which will be one of the world's most powerful optical devices, on the mountaintop. Two smaller telescopes have been in operation for several years. Police said the protesters had signs with sharp sticks and other items that could be used as weapons, and that two lab employees sustained minor injuries when the demonstrators forced their way inside. The protesters were inside for about 5 minutes, but there doesn't appear to be any damage, said University of Arizona Police Commander Brian Seastone. Seastone and UA Police Chief Anthony Dakin said officers forced the demonstrators from the building, then set up a protective perimeter and waited for reinforcements from Tucson police and the university. They said demonstrators were ordered to move to a designated area to be detained and interviewed, but some people fled, and others began fighting and interfering with officers. All 27, including one juvenile, were charged with rioting, a felony, and a few also faced charges of aggravated assault, Seastone said. He said some were released after an initial appearance, while some remained jailed, and the number of remained jailed has been whittled down to 4 at this time. We thank Associated Press for that story, and we go direct to a statement from the protesters. Henceforth, this is what they were trying to give to the university folks. Henceforth, it is hereby ordered that the University of Arizona adhere to all environmental, cultural, and religious freedom laws previously violated and cease and desist all construction on Zilnicasian, also known as Mount Graham, and vacate all surrounding areas immediately. Approximately 24 Native nations and community activists were detained by Tucson Police Department for expressing their First Amendment speech. As the group approached the University of Arizona Mall, they were told to stop and leave the area. In response, they chanted, "U of A off Mount Graham, no scopes on Mount Graham, and this is what democracy looks like." Representatives and legal observers from the National Lawyers Guild were on hand to record the events. Agent Brown brownie wearing a brown bandana who, before the police cracked down, was asked why he was there. "We want U of A off of Mount Graham. They need to respect that land." Seconds later, the Tucson Police Department swooped down, handcuffed the protesters, taped off the area, and told media to get back. The reporter on the site for Earth First Radio stressed that the media had a right to be present and record the events. They did not respect this right. The rights of peaceful protesters to express their First Amendment rights were violated as well. Tofu Chocolate Pie, a veteran nonviolent activist from the World Trade Organization and DNC protests in L.A., was one of the ones to be detained. She says, "Let people know that the cops were beating peaceful protesters. This is not right. This is not constitutional." And we thank Janine Schaefer, a reporter for the Sonoran Activist Network News, and you can contact her at SonoranAlliance@Hotmail.com. That's SonoranAlliance@Hotmail.com. And last week, you may remember, we reported on a tree sit in England. And want to say that the tree is saved. Follow on from a previous Earth First Radio News about direct action campaign in Devizes, Wiltshire, England, to save a tree near the town center. I'm extremely delighted to say that tree is saved. The local district council claimed it needed to fell the tree because it was diseased. However, the local protesters argued the tree was healthy and felling was only happening because the town council wanted to develop the town center. After a high-profile direct action campaign which involved tree sitters, pickets with placards, and a car deliberately being parked under the threatened tree, the council conceded to call in an independent tree surgeon to assess the health of the tree. The result? The tree is not diseased. This means the tree stays. Fantastic news and a total victory for that local campaign. Keep it up. Moving to Russia. Russian Greens tree sit in a battle with gas giants in a nature preserve. This from the Moscow Times of August 27th. Took us a little while to get this one, but you know how the world is. A group of environmental activists waged a campaign in August against the construction of the Blue Stream gas pipeline through a forest reserve in Krasnodar territory. The $3.2 billion project will pump Russian gas 1,200 kilometers from the Stavropol region to Ankara, Turkey. About half the pipeline will be submerged in the Black Sea. Natural gas monopoly Gazprom, which is building the pipeline jointly with Italy's Eni, considers Blue Stream strategically important for expanding its export volumes, is hoping to complete its construction by the end of next year. In order for the pipeline to reach the Black Sea, however, it had to cut through a reserve of Crimean pines called Arkhipo Osipokovskoye, a tract 236 to be exact. 12 protesters from the Social Ecological Union of the Western Caucasus staged a demonstration against the pipeline's construction by sitting in ancient trees in an attempt to impede construction work. "We will protest until the destruction of several hectares of pine forest is stopped," Andrei Radamaka, co-chairman of the Social Ecological Union, told Interfax in August. "There is little hope, however. They aren't touching the trees in which our protesters are sitting. It remains unclear whether Gazprom and its contractors are breaking the law in clearing parts of the forest to make way for the pipeline." The contractors, of course, contend the local forestry commission gave them permission to cut down 2.9 hectares and that $1 million will be paid to restore part of the forest. "They're just provoking us," said a construction director who declined to give his name. "They just wanted to delay construction work." The Arkhipo Osipokoye Forest was established in 1983 in a regional initiative, said Ivan Blokov, director of Greenpeace Russia. "Forest preserves are created on federal, regional, and local levels, and their protection and maintenance is delegated accordingly. You don't see much unlawful clearing of federal reserves," Blokov said, "but on a regional level it's much more widespread, and this is an interesting case because the contractors are obscure firms who seem to be taking no extra care while felling the trees." And Uncle Dennis wants to say that's the first reported instance of tree sitting in Russia that I know of. Moving to Animal Liberation Front news, the ALF has targeted Iowa animal exploiters. 2,000 mink are released from the Jewel Fur Farm, and 162 pigeons, ducks, and geese are rescued from the Glenwood facility. This week, the Underground Animal Liberation Front has targeted two animal exploitation facilities in the Midwest state of Iowa, releasing thousands of mink from a fur farm and rescuing numerous birds from an animal research breeder. Both places have been previously targeted by the ALF. In two separate communiques sent to the ALF press office, ALF activists claimed responsibility for both actions. Although both occurred in the same state within 3 days of each other, it remains unclear whether the same ALF cell is responsible for both actions. Here's a summary of the action at Eisbrand Fur Farm in Jewell, Iowa. In the late hours of October 16th, the ALF entered an unnamed fur farm on Tolman Road in Jewell, Iowa, and opened all the mink cages, releasing an estimated 2,000 mink into the surrounding area. Press office records show that this fur farm is Isebrand Fur Farm, which was targeted previously by ALF activists 2 years ago on August 21st, when 3,000 mink were released. This most recent action was the 70th time animals have been released from a fur farm in North America since the campaign against fur farms began over 6 years ago. Here's that communique from the ALF. The ALF Front Animal Liberation Front is claiming responsibility for the liberation of 2,000 mink from a fur farm in Jewell, Iowa, on Tolman Road in the late hours of October 16th. Every animal was released. Fences surrounding the farm were cut away, every cage opened, and 2,000 mink ran to freedom. These animals were kept 3 and 4 to a small wire mesh cage. Their rescue came at the final hour, only a month from a violent death in the pelting season. Captive bred mink are closely related to their wild ancestors and have been shown to retain survival instincts when released, ensuring these liberated prisoners will live and thrive. The fur industry will move to condemn this action using misleading half-truths and bold-faced lies. They point their fingers with blood-stained hands. There is no defensible case for the taking of innocent life. Furthermore, there is no defensible argument against militant intervention to prevent this atrocity. When mink are no longer kept 4 to a small wire cage, where chickens are no longer packed into battery cages, when we stop calling dead animals food, when blood stops spilling, these actions outside the law will no longer be needed. Until then, we will be tearing down fences, breaking down walls, opening cages to free the animals. Terrorism against non-human animals will be met with liberation. In this struggle for life against greed, compassion over sadism, our only recourse is to ignore laws and risk our freedom to save lives. Were you in a cage, whose side would you be on? And moving to the second action, at the Double T Farms in Glenwood, Iowa, in the early morning hours of October 18th, the ALF entered several sheds at Double T Farms in Glenwood, Iowa, at 21655 Barris Road, and cut the wire mesh fencing to pens holding pigeons, ducks, and geese, releasing approximately 162 birds. The activists also state that the sheds were damaged or destroyed. This is the second time ALF activists have targeted Double T Farms. On September 9th last year, ALF activists rescued and released 215 pigeons. Double T Farms breeds various species of birds for use in animal experimentation. A cruel and senseless death at the hands of vivisectors, state the ALF. Activists further say that there will be further visits until the operation is shut down. Here's the actual communique. In the early morning hours of October 18th, the Animal Liberation Front visited Double T Farms, a breeder of birds for vivisection. We located the pigeon shed and cut through the wire mesh perimeter. 62 pigeons were found and released. These pigeons were destined for a cruel and senseless death at the hands of vivisectors. All possible nesting boxes were emptied and breeder tags were removed from each bird. The shed was also damaged. A second aviary was containing ducks and geese was located, and 50 yards of netting cut away, allowing approximately 50 birds held captive to escape, and a third aviary holding approximately 50 geese was similarly ripped apart. And those geese who did not immediately take flight were picked up and taken outside. Approximately 162 birds were released. This is the ALF's second visit to Double T Farms, and further visits to Ted Golka's operation is shut down. Risking our freedom for theirs, ALF, and this news came to us from the North American Animal Liberation Front press office. Moving to Oregon, the Oregon Hide and Seek timber sale has been canceled. This according to BARC. We have received written notification that the BLM has canceled the hide-and-seek timber sale. For those who don't recall, hide-and-seek was an old-growth sale located on both sides of Highway 26 near Welch's, Oregon. The north part was dropped earlier due to the Little Sandy legislation, but until recently they had stated that they were proceeding with the south part of the sale, and now that south part is canceled too. The stated reason for the cancellation is that the fungi Ramaria aerosipora is throughout the sale area. This mushroom has protection as a survey and managed species under the Northwest Forest Plan in that they have to protect all known sites. However, we can never underestimate the power of public pressure. A lot of people wrote comments on hide and seek, and this always affects the agency's decision-making process. If you'd like more information, contact BARC, their number 503-331-0374. That's 503-331-0374. Or visit their website at www.bark-out.org. bark-out.org. That's bark-out.org. And in the sort of semi-sweet and sour category for tonight's news, we have word that Maxham Pacific Lumber Company has offered a settlement in David Gypsy Chain's death. About 3 years ago, on September 17th, 1998, a young man by the name of David Gypsy Chain was killed when an enraged Maxham Corporation Pacific Lumber logger felled trees at nonviolent forest activists. Despite the live videotaped evidence of the Maxham faller threatening the activists, no charges were ever filed. In fact, the activists themselves were threatened with involuntary manslaughter charges as the Humboldt County Sheriff's Department tried to turn tables on the whole situation. This is very similar to what the FBI and the Oakland Police Department attempted to do with Judy Berry and Daryl Cherney, which was also ultimately unsuccessful. The local district attorney, Terry Farmer, made the erroneous ruling that Gypsy's death was an accident. Others were there and know that the faller knew that they were there and was intentionally falling trees, even with all of the first-hand and videotaped evidence. State and federal law enforcement failed to investigate Gypsy's death. Therefore, a civil suit had to be filed, which was then eventually filed by Gypsy's family. For 3 long years, the Gypsy case progressed through depositions, forever getting closer to the trial date. During the first 6 months, we had the Gypsy Mountain Free State, a forest occupation set up to keep Maxham from disturbing the area that Earth first believed to be a crime scene. The area was held for 3 weeks, a scrap material wall at the highway, a junk car, the Gypsy Mobile, the largest hand-raised bipod in North American history, 70 feet high, a tripod, a teepee, and people ready to lock down to the heavy machinery on top of the ridge. After 3 weeks, the Free State was raided and people came back and locked down across the road the very next day. During that time, the area around the tree that had fallen on Gypsy was designated as evidence, first for local investigators and then for the civil suit. Next, tree sits were put up, which continued from October 1998 to March 1999. During the summer of 1999, logging resumed on Gypsy Mountain and a teepee was raised to commemorate the fallen ones of this land. Right around the time of the depositions in September of last year, Maxham Corporation cut down some of the trees which had housed tree sits during the Free State, trees very close to the area in question and very close to our hearts. Last week, an out-of-court settlement was reached. Just a few days before going to trial in Oakland, California federal court, Maxham Corporation finally started talking about settling out of court. By doing this, Maxham admits their guilt in wrongfully taking the life of David Gypsy Chain. The settlement says that the tree that was fallen on Gypsy will not be moved and will have a 100-foot protection buffer around it, and that a memorial grove will be created somewhere on Pacific Lumber land, and the assumption is that will be somewhere very close to that area but probably closer to the road. The settlement also included a roundtable discussion, which will include Gypsy's mother, Cindy, Maxham Pacific Lumber workers, law enforcement, and environmentalists. The purpose of this discussion is to find solutions to the problems that plague Humboldt County, such as violence in the forest and corporate control of local businesses. There was also a monetary settlement of an undisclosed amount. Hopefully, this will set a precedent and will help prevent future tragedies. You cannot solve life's problems by dropping trees on people, nor bombs. Peace from the North Woods. And unfortunately, coming up from South America, we have news. The leader of Greenpeace Amazon campaign has been threatened with death. This news from Manaus, Brazil. Fresh photo and video evidence of extensive illegal logging in the Amazon rainforest released by Greenpeace last month has brought retaliation. A telephone call received last week at a house where Greenpeace campaigners live and work in Manaus in the heart of the Brazilian Amazon threatened death to Paulo Adario, who coordinates Greenpeace's Amazon campaign. Quote, "This is not only a serious threat against my life, but of greater importance it is a threat to all people who campaign to protect the Amazon," said Adario. "It is clear that our recent work exposing illegal logging of the mahogany of the Amazon is at the base of this threat. In Brazil, it is well known that most of the mahogany trade is controlled by criminals who for too long have been allowed to operate with impunity," unquote. Photographs and video images from recent aerial reconnaissance by Greenpeace's showed sophisticated logging operation in lands belonging to the Kayapo Indians, where logging is strictly prohibited. Satellite images obtained by Greenpeace also revealed details of these operations. This information was delivered to the federal prosecutor in Brasilia, the capital of Brazil, along with Greenpeace's call for a full investigation. Greenpeace has been conducting its campaign against illegal logging with the full cooperation and support of the Brazilian government. Also happening is controversial pipeline construction has been blockaded in Equatorian Cloud Forest Reserve. Local women and children protest a Citigroup-based project. Ecuadorian groups announced that dozens of women and children began a peaceful blockade of the OCP consortium machinery as it attempted to clear protected forest to build Ecuador's new heavy crude pipeline. The building of the pipeline along its current route, funded in part by Citigroup, will devastate 11 protected forest areas and lead to the doubling of oil production from national parks and other protected areas in the Ecuadorian Amazon and have a devastating impact on local communities. Approximately 40 people from local communities affected by the pipeline were participating in the successful blockade. This blockade has virtually stopped the crews from destroying this globally significant cloud forest reserve, said environmental group Axie Ecology, noting that a resistance camp will be maintained in the Los Garumos region of the Non-Tandapaya Road, an approximately two-hour drive from Quito, Ecuador. You want to help out here? Call Citigroup's Investor Relations. Their number, 1-888-250-3985. That's 888-250-3985, and dial zero until you reach a human operator. Tell them to get the hell out of Ecuador and stop this destructive project. Stop funding destructive activities anywhere in the world, such as fossil fuel development and logging. Organize a solidarity demonstration at your local Ecuadorian consulate, and you can find those at www.ecuador.org. That's www.ecuador.org. Go pay them a visit. If you'd like a full background on OCP and the oil development's destructive legacy in Ecuador, see Amazon Watch's report, The New Heavy Crude Pipeline in Ecuador Fueling a Second Oil Boom in the Amazon, at www.amazonwatch.org. That's www.amazonwatch.org. And of course, for more resources and assistance in organizing against Citigroup in your community, check out www.ran.org. That's Rainforest Action Network, www.ran.org. Or you can call them at 800-989-RAIN. That's 800-989-RAIN to get more information about all that. Here's something you can do. If you live in the Portland, Oregon area, there's an upcoming tour on a proposed Oregon timber sale at Mill Creek coming up Saturday, October 27th. The Hood River District of the Mount Hood National Forest has just sent out scoping letters seeking early comments on their proposed Mill Creek timber sale. The proposed sale is 1,436 acres. Wow. Huge. It's located east of Highway 35 and north of and adjacent to the Dalles Watershed. The exact boundaries are on the west, the Surveyor's Ridge Trail, to the south, the Dalles Watershed, on the east, the forest boundary, and on the north, the forest boundary. Comments on this timber sale are due December 15th. BARC has posted Forest Service's scoping letter and the sale map on their website. That's www.bark-out.org. And the Forest Service is organizing a field trip to the area Saturday, October 27th at 9 a.m. It will depart from the Hood River Ranger Station on Highway 35. If you're planning on attending, please confirm with Rich Thurman or Rick Reagan at the Hood River Ranger District, 541-352-6002. That's 541-352-6002. And the extension 626 or 622, you can leave a message for those folks. BARC encourages people to attend these Forest Service-organized field trips in order to meet people who plan the timber sales and to challenge them face-to-face, obviously, in a nonviolent, good-hearted way. It is also a good opportunity to get details on their proposed plan, and the more details we have, the more basis we have for fighting them. And stay tuned for Earth First Radio for more details on the sale and details on BARC hikes to the area in November or December. I believe the next BARC hike will be November 11th, but I'm not sure where they'll be going on November 11th. But stay tuned to BARC if you live in the Portland, Oregon area. You can contact BARC at 503-331-0374. If you don't live in the Portland area, go there. Bring a raincoat. 503-331-0374. and get out on that hike. Once again, that webpage, www.bark-out.org. Oh, let's see here. We've got a short one here. Wilderness First Aid Class coming up on Tuesday, November 6th, and the weekend of November 10th and 11th is a 20-hour class for anyone who wants to learn how to handle emergency medical situations in the backcountry. Covers basic wilderness first aid topics, patient assessment, shock and bleeding, head and spinal injuries, wounds, heat and cold illnesses, and much more. Adult CPR and Wilderness First Aid certification from the American Health and Safety Institute and Outdoors Unlimited is available after successful completion of the course and wilderness exam. For more information, call 415-788-3666. That's 415-788-3666 and try extension 126 or 127. And I believe these classes are in the San Francisco Bay Area. We're going to take a little musical break here. Robert Hoyt, In the Valley of the Shadow.
Walking through the valley of the shadow, I tell you what, it's been a living hell. There were people all around me, but there was no one that I could tell. I've been walking through the valley of the shadow, so far down that I had no direction to proceed but up. No escape, no place to hide. A dangerous place, I almost died. I've been walking through the valley, now I'm coming on the other side. I don't know how, I don't know when, that I let this shadow o'er me steal. I guess things could get worse, but if they did, that's not the way I'd feel. The valley of the shadow is where I walked. I was tortured even when I talked. So far down, nowhere to go but up. It's like struggling against the tide. No escape, believe me, I tried. I've been walking tight. No escape, believe me, I tried. I've been walking through the valley, now I'm coming on the other side. In the valley, there's only one thing to do. Get up, keep moving. So far down, there's nowhere to go but up. I've been walking through the valley, now I'm coming on the other. Walking through the valley, now I'm coming on the other. Walking through the valley, now I'm coming on the other side.
At Earth First Radio, we'll be right back. Stay tuned.